This is Making Connections, and I'm Barb Seaman. Today we're talking about the subject of information, because we all know misinformation has become a huge problem. We see issues that turn into problems that turn into disasters. And I think a lot of times it's a result of misunderstandings, people not being informed enough about an issue or a subject. And now with social media, there are deliberate attempts to use misinformation to keep these problems festering. And then this past summer, sometime around July of 2021, the Surgeon General actually put out an advisory to warn of the urgent threat of health misinformation. He said that misinformation is spreading at an unprecedented speed and scale, but he added an optimistic note. He said, "Together, we have the power to build a healthier information environment where we make more informed decisions about our health and the health of our loved ones and communities." So I wanted to explore this. How do we build a healthier information environment? Not just around health information, but in general terms, how do we do that? So today, I'd like to welcome my guest, Hillary Marshall, who is a library media specialist for the high school in Washougal, Washington. Hillary, thanks so much for helping me think all of this through. I really appreciate you being here.
I'm really excited to be here, Barb. Thank you.
Yeah. So real quick, I wonder if you could just tell me about yourself and what your job entails. How long have you been a quote unquote librarian?
So I have been a librarian for 26 years, and I'm a school librarian, because there's all different types of librarians out there.
Okay. And has that job changed in the last 26 years? What has surprised you most as you look back?
Well, you know, gosh, a librarian, right? I've always promoted a love of reading and taught information literacy, you know, but the platforms and technology have simply exploded. So in terms of reading, in my 26 years, you know, I have done everything from kindergarten all the way to high school, but my current job at Washougal High School, I will be starting my 9th year this fall. You know, I've noticed that students' interest has waned in reading, so I'm constantly switching gears. And now I'm going more for this librarian term, which is windows, sliding doors, and mirror approach, where you look that you look at a book that is a window into somebody else's life, right? So you're just kind of peering in and getting a glimpse of what it's like. Or sliding doors, where you actually step over that threshold and become more understanding of that. Or a mirror, it's a reflection of your life. In terms of research, though, I started my career with, you know, like print subject databases, and gosh, the internet hadn't even really gotten going yet. Mm-hmm. And now here we are. And, you know, as I prepare for the school year, social media has exploded and how information is consumed, and learning how to sift through algorithms. I have to teach all of that to students. So I think what has really surprised me is the constant challenge of change in technology in my job. Mm-hmm. And also how with my students, it doesn't seem to matter if the information is correct or balanced rather than riddled with bias and political sway.
Wow, that's sounds a little scary to hear you say that. So, I mean, but what are the consequences of making bad choices when taking in information? Why is it so important that we start teaching children to be better consumers of media?
Oh, it's so important, Barb. I think we need to remember, though, that educators need to meet students where they are at in terms of where they are consuming and getting their information, right? Mm-hmm. It's different from adult educators versus, say, you know, a 16, 17, 18-year-old student, where, you know, where are you spending your time getting your news, right? So with my students, they're getting their information primarily from social buzz on their social media platforms, right? So, like I mentioned, it's a problem, right? If they're not understanding the information, right? So first, what I have to do is help them understand their platforms. They know how to use them. That's not what they need to know. They need to know how those companies aggregate their data, you know, build their algorithms to push out the information that they're getting. So, you know, what I like to do is high school teens in particular, they really work well with their peers, right? So I like to partner them up and give them an assignment and a search assignment and see what they do with it and what kind of results they get. And it's quite eye-opening at times because of how algorithms are built. For instance, a lot of them are in the same area. So if I could even put them in different geographical areas, that would also change their search results as well.
So what do you mean by that when you say in the same area?
Oh, because they're all in the city of Washougal.
Oh, I see,
right?
What you're saying.
So, okay. And technology is all tied to IP addresses, right? Mm-hmm. So you're always going to have a tie to a location. Yeah.
And do the kids understand that? I mean, when they...
Well, that's what I work on. Yeah, okay. And it's kind of eye-opening and boggling to them. They had no idea, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and these are new kinds of skills. So like every year, technology is constantly changing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm having to stay abreast of all those changes and then teach those changes so that students understand.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I learned a few years ago about how some of the there are some organizations who are sort of like using the internet to kind of recruit young kids over to their type of mentality. I don't really know how to explain it, but, you know, like, so there's an example that I found where there's this neo-Nazi editor. Mm-hmm. There's a site called the Daily Stormer, and the editor of that, whose name is Andrew Anglin, like, I read an article about how he actually said on a radio show that he designed his site to target children for radicalization. And I just found that so scary. So, I mean, have you seen any instances of that kind of stuff happening within your school building there?
Yeah, actually, I have. Not to that radical of a measure. Mm-hmm. But I was reading an article, and this quote stood out for me, where it says, "Educators are the frontline workers of our democracy." Mm. And as my, you know, personal perspective as an educator for 26 years, we simply aren't doing enough in education. So if educators don't teach students, then others are going to come out and find these, you know, malleable students and impress their ideas on these young minds. Because, you know, we need to remember that students want to figure out who they are, right? They want to belong to some sort of community with like-minded people, and they're trying to find their sense of purpose, right? Mm-hmm. So they're doing that digitally through social media. And if they don't understand how it works and how their data is sifted, then they are going to be more targeted, or something's going to pique their interest and they're going to get caught kind of in that rabbit hole or that web. So I think the classroom is actually the safest place to navigate, you know, these avenues, look at all different perspectives, so then they can make up their mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and in terms of an example, Washougal is a very conservative community. And, you know, in teenagers, a lot of times when they're building their own identity and their own beliefs, they base it on what they get at home, right? So really kind of what their parents are believing, they believe, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you got to remember, like, teenagers are kind of pranksters and everything. But with all of the social justice issues and Black Lives Matter, issues that were prevalent last year. I have a Black colleague who I just adore, and that classroom of that Black colleague was right across the library. And we have a lot of dissension in Washougal with the Trump candidacy and all that entailed. There was a lot of trauma around that, and we had some, you know, young white teenage boys being pranksters, and they slapped a Trump sticker on this Black colleague's door. And to them, they were just playing a joke. It was no big deal. Mm-hmm. But to my colleague, who has had quite a year, that became almost a hate crime, Barb. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, so in the school setting, though, they sat down in a restorative circle, meaning, you know, administrators were there, that my Black colleague was there, the students involved were there, and they got to talk about what that really meant. And so I think you know, and my Black colleague, that colleague showed lots of grace, being willing to talk about it, but it was very traumatic for them mm-hmm. as well. But in that environment, there was so much learning that happened, right? So mm-hmm. these boys who I think are learning from their families, and it's not that, you know, it's bad. It's they had an opportunity to see from a Black lens what that sticker meant and the harmful things that meant. So it was a teaching opportunity.
Yeah, I see what you mean there. And so you feel like the kids who did this actually came away having learned something?
I would hope so. I was not involved in that. This is all third person, you know, hearsay. But it opened up a conversation that they never would have had before, I don't think.
Right. And I feel like that's something that happens in this day and age, too, is people can pick and choose what messages they want to get. And so it's really important to try to, you know, sort of like open up the spectrum of what information comes in. So we're not always hearing the same message over and over, which is just reinforcing our beliefs, even if our beliefs are narrow-minded.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that we can pick and choose. Actually, the, you know, the digital media that you are on is picking and choosing for you based on your past searches and your past interests. Mm-hmm. And it is already limiting you and pointing you to like-minded content.
Hmm.
That's how they're built.
Yeah. And for kids who are in high school and even younger, it just seems to me kind of a dangerous territory to be in, because they are impressionable and they don't have those critical thinking skills honed yet to be able to understand how they're being kind of played.
Well, I think it's true for adults too.
Oh,
yeah. So, and dangerous. Yes, it is dangerous, but we can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, I'd like to explore that a little bit more. So first, let's take a quick little break to thank some of our KXRW sponsors, and then let's come back and talk about that, okay?
Sounds good.
A big thank you to Vancouver's own Kagan's Theater for supporting our radio community. Our historic Kagan's Theater has a long tradition of showing movies for our community, 85 years. Kagan's currently features first-run big studio and art house films along with classic movie revival. Check out their live events, and you can even book the theater for a private party or public event. Go to kagansthéâtre.com to see how you can rediscover the joy of going out for movie night again. Showtimes, booking information, and more at kagansthéâtre.com.
The 18th Annual Vancouver Peace and Justice Fair is coming Saturday, September 11th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Esther Short Park. It showcases individuals, social justice groups, peace organizations, faith communities, performers and artists, business and environmental activists who make the world a better place. There will be many new activities, exhibits, and sponsors, as well as returning favorites. More information and volunteer opportunities available at vancouverpeaceandjusticefair.org. And in times like these, it's important to amplify the good stuff. Give More 24 is your chance to do just that. It's Southwest Washington's largest day of giving, and it all kicks off on September 23rd. That's the day that our region comes together to give more. Matching gifts and nonprofit prizes will make giving go further, and it all unfolds online at givemore24.org. That's where you can find, support, and celebrate more than 200 local charities. So help amplify the good in our region. Visit givemore24.org today and find a nonprofit to support on September 23rd. Welcome back. This is Making Connections on KXRW Radio. I'm Barb Seaman, and I'm speaking with Hillary Marshall, who is the Library Media Specialist at Washougal High School. So, Ms. Marshall, tell me a little bit about what can be done about the problem of media illiteracy. I mean, how do we go about building a better health information environment? Any suggestions?
Well, I can give you suggestions as a librarian and how I approach it with high school students. Okay. And then I use kind of those same skills as I look at my own media consumption, right? So, you know, what we've learned through the pandemic is that we need to create assignments that students can go step by step through the research process, but also kind of in their own mode and own way by first giving them a choice, right, on a topic that interests them. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot to manage, but once you can locate a topic that's interesting to you, then giving them skills and teaching them different approaches to research, and then creating kind of a collaborative discussion to create that relationship and community environment. So students in high school think they know it all. I love them, but they think they know how to research. And so when I start with a class, I ask them, how do you go about the research process? And we talk, we get their ideas out there first. And I'm like, well, you know what? Here, I'm going to give you some shocking information. And what I do is I use a platform YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do we know that this is credible? Because that is a video, but we also know that there's video editing software out there. And I make them look at three pillars of verification, right? Like, what is the source? Now, who captured the video? Who posted the content online? I mean, there's much more to than who wrote the book or who wrote the article, right? When it comes to kind of media literacy. And then I always have them look for location, right? And that place, it can also be augmented by various editing softwares, right? And then the date. So it depends on the event, right? Is the first to post that timestamp, is that the most credible? Or as a scenario is going on, you know, and they're trying to run journalism, sometimes a later post is more accurate because more details have had been sifted through. Mm-hmm. So I look at three pillars of verification with the students. I teach those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then media literacy skills in my own research, what I do is I teach lateral reading. Sorry, I got tongue-tied there. But basically, I open up a source that I like. Okay, so I'm very Democratic, so I like CNN. All right, so that's a very left-winged news source, right? Then I open up a very right-winged news source. Okay, for me, my family is very conservative, and my father really likes Fox News. So I pick up the same topic in a Fox News article, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm reading a very dramatic right side. And then I pull up a medium target. And for me in the education field, it's always been PBS NewsHour. Mm-hmm. So I take that same topic, left, right, medium, and I read across so I can get verified information. I'm getting the factual information, sifting through the bias, right? Because I've got my left bias, my right bias, and now something in the center. So when I can find that kind of information, that's really helpful. And then I think that really surprises students when we look at the same idea from different lateral reading. So, and then also using tricks of the trade, like a reverse image search. So if I had a specific image, I can plop that into Google and I can go back just using the image and find information.
Tell me how you do that. You just put an image in the search bar or?
Yes. And then it comes up and you can see it in different places it's been posted.
Hmm.
So yeah, that one always gets students and they get really excited about that particular skill. Hmm. But I also go back to common sense. Does this make sense to you? If it gets your antenna up at all, then take the time to take a look, you know, the left, right, middle kind of look.
I mean, how hard is it to teach them, or do they even know yet how to differentiate between misinformation and bias? Like when they're reading, or how do you teach somebody how to start recognizing bias?
That's a great question, Barb. Okay, so first of all, I go with bias is that's your opinion based on your life experience and your familial background. It's kind of the constant in the human nature. Barb, you have a bias. I have a bias. Each student is going to have a bias, mm-hmm. all right? Mm-hmm. So it's fundamental. It's not right or wrong. It's based on you, right? Mm-hmm. And your lived experience.
Yeah.
So I try to take the word misinformation because it's sure gotten heated with fake news mm-hmm. and misinformation, bogus news. And I've got, and I put it on a student level, and I'm talking about rumors.
Hmm.
Like, how do you debunk a rumor? If somebody was to say this and it gets your antenna up because it doesn't sound quite right. In terms of rumors, that makes sense to teens and, you know, to tweens, like our middle schoolers and our high schoolers, because they are so peer focused, right? So
I remember reading, like, one way to sort of get your antenna up and to start noticing that something might be amiss in an article is if the headline makes you feel strong emotions, like they're trying to needle you into getting mad or getting sad, and to sort of bait you into reading their article. And so I just find that so interesting how there are so many small little tricks people use.
That's, you know, persuasive journalism, right? Mm-hmm. And in our world of clickbait mm-hmm. or share bait, mm-hmm. where they want you to keep clicking down to this rabbit hole and then they get you sucked in, or share, and then you share it and you haven't even looked at it. You haven't even read it.
Right.
That is a huge problem. So I always talk to students about stop and think before you share anything. Read through it. Use your three pillars of verification. It, you know, if it's too good to be true, then yeah, you need to sleuth it out. Try that lateral reading of left, right, middle kinds of news sources. And then make a commitment to yourself to be part of the solution of not spreading misinformation by stopping those rumors.
Mm-hmm. Do you find mm-hmm. that kids are receptive to making that commitment?
I've only gotten to share with one class, Barb. And last year was such a tough year in education. Yeah. You know, just getting through the lesson, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if people got through. But as I prepare for the school year this year, I'm motivated. I'm really motivated to bring this challenge to Washougal High School.
Yeah.
To be part of the solution.
So do you have any advice for people who are trying to deal with friends or family and there's a lot of misinformation being tossed around?
So what I first start with your relationship, right? So this actually happens a lot in my family, right? So it's my mom and dad and I don't see eye to eye politically, right? So mm-hmm. first I want to acknowledge that they're my parents and I respect them as my parents and I'm not going to change their opinion mm-hmm. and their opinion is very different than mine. So I start with that foundation. And then I go with, as a researcher, you know, as a love of a research, as a librarian, I start with inquiry and I'm like, so dad, why did you share this information with me? Did you know, what did you see in that article that, or that news segment that was really powerful, and stood out to you? And then I'm like, And then maybe I'll ask for some time to go do some search on my own, use that lateral reading, mm-hmm. you know, get the left, right, middle. And so I have my own ground and then come back and, you know, and then kind of answer. So first of all, diffuse and give it space and time and start with questions, you know, that's an interesting point. And I think because when we get into shouting matches and all these emotions, then you totally even lose content, right? So dial it down a notch. And yeah, that and that's how I approach it in my own relationships. Yeah.
That sounds like really good advice. I wish somebody had taught me that like 30 years ago. Let me just ask you, like, do you have any predictions or are there any silver linings that you could point out? Like, what do you expect in the next couple years?
You know, I think a silver lining for me is that young people and I'm seeing more in the Portland area, I'm talking like in their 20s, so outside of high school, are really starting to get vocal about social justice. So I'm excited as we approach the school year, invigorating my students and preparing them to be part of solutions. You know, I really enjoy reading and discussing books around diverse issues, and I've paired with our public library and created this program called Washougal Reads, where we read a novel and we bring in local authorities on the particular topic and we discuss it as a community. And we are going to continue that next year. And I'm looking forward to that. So I think there is hope. I think education still has quite a bit to do in terms of teaching students about misinformation and making sure that we're not, you know, they're not just clicking around and sharing, but really being critical thinkers. And we got our work set out for us. But my silver lining is, yeah, I'm excited for that work and motivated to teach our students to be part of a solution.
Well, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me about this. It's a topic I find really fascinating and constantly changing. And I just like I'm hoping for the best and hoping that we can keep teaching young people to how to have an open mind and sort of expand their horizons a little bit. I really appreciate your input from your perspective. Thank you so much, Ms. Marshall.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, Barb. It was really fun.
And thank you for listening in. I'm Barb Seaman, and this is KXRW Radio. We're a volunteer-powered and community-supported 501c3 nonprofit, and your support could help us out so much. If you like our informative local talk and music programming, please consider becoming a member or make a small donation. Every little bit helps with our monthly operational bills and expanding equipment needs. Go to kxrw.fm to find out more, or send me a message at barb.seaman@kxrw.fm. After all, an informed community is a healthier community. Information overload.